Fourth and final hour of Darren and Donick here on ESPN 102.5. The game, 6 days and counting until the first round begins. NFL draft in our city. Titans will pick 19th, at least as of today. And we're going to talk about all that and more with Jim White from TitansOnline.com. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are doing fantastic. Before we get into a little pigskin, what did you think of Vanderbilt hiring Jerry Stackhouse? What did you think of that?
I like it. I mean, I was definitely on board with them making a change, and I'm not one of these people who think, well, anything's better than what they had, and even though that's the truth, because I didn't think that I think the level that the program had sunk to was at a level I had not seen it since I've been going to games out there since, you know, the late 70s. So something needed to change. I like Jerry Stackhouse. You know, when the hire was made, I have to say, when initially the reports came out, scratched my head a little bit just because he's not a name that appeared in a lot of college head coaching searches. But certainly I'm familiar with him from his days in college and in the pros. And after hearing more about him and listening to his press conference and listening to some podcasts that he's been on, I think he's going to get players' attention. I think he's going to be able to develop players. I think he's going to be able to recruit. And I think you're not going to see players, you know, giving up on a coach and giving up on a season like what happened last year. So I'm excited about the change and on board with Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah, we had him in studio for about 30 minutes, and pretty impressive. I think we're all curious to see how this plays out. We were also curious to see how the schedule would play out for the Titans. They're coming off a 9-win season. I don't think the league did them any favors. That's just my opinion. 4 of the first 6 on the road, and you got Atlanta and Denver and Jacksonville and the Browns as the 4 road games, Indy and Buffalo at home, and then really tough to end the season. 2 games against the Texans and a game against New Orleans. What did you make of the schedule?
Well, I was kind of hoping for more primetime games. I thought the team had put itself in a position to maybe at least toast one primetime game after being, you know, certainly on the road for a couple of Monday night games last year. And they did host, obviously, the Jags on a Thursday night, and the game got flexed late in the season against Indy. So I was a little bit surprised it didn't get more opportunities there. It is a little bit tough early. I mean, 3 of the first 4 on the road, you mentioned, I don't like the cluster against the Texans late where you play them 2 out of the last 3 games and you've got the Saints sandwiched in. That's a tough ending. But
you know, have you seen that before, Jim? I mean, you've been around. I can't remember 2 out of 3 weeks playing the same opponent in the NFL. Can you?
It doesn't happen much. It happens occasionally. And
okay,
the Titans had pretty close games and pretty close proximity to the Colts a couple of years ago. I remember that. I don't like seeing that, especially at the end of the season. But, the schedule, you know, is what is presented to you. And you've got to go out and play. And if the Titans play well and they're a contender, they'll get some games flexed, in games weeks 11 through 17. If not, then, you'll be seeing them at noon a lot of times. But, I definitely don't think it's easy at the start, but I always look at it and say if you can fare well early, you can build some momentum going into the meat of it, and that's what this team's going to have to do. I mean, and I will say I think the Browns are going to be a lot better this year, kind of like it took a big step last year, but with so many new pieces and with a new coaching staff, maybe it takes them a little while to get going, so maybe it's good to get them in week 1.
Jimmy, I agree with you 100%. In fact, I said yesterday with Tim Hasselbeck on the show with us, the Browns will be the most overbet team in the first month of the season. My guess is Vegas will rake on the Browns because everybody, the line's going to be inflated and people are going to pound on the Browns. And I think early on, my guess is Vegas will make their hotels even nicer, because I think they're going to win a lot of money. I just think the hype is, you know, maybe it's going to be real, but I'm with you. It may take some time. You're just not going to create magic the first month of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they're going to be fired up in week one up there. I mean, you're going to be walking into a place that's jacked up. But what NFL city isn't jacked up in week one? So if you're going to get them in a jacked up environment, you might as well get them early. And I'd rather go to Cleveland in September than December.
Yes, amen to that. In fact, I think I'm going to road trip up for that game. Willie and I have seen things from just going, being downtown and seeing all the construction, everything going on. But we haven't seen it like you. You're more in depth to what's going on, the transformation of our downtown getting ready for this NFL draft and what's getting ready for an incredible 4 days of, you know, a rock and roll marathon and a Jimmy Buffett concert and everything with the draft and possibly hockey playoff games. I mean, it's going to be crazy. The biggest event and probably the biggest showcase our city has ever put on. I don't think that's even debatable. What have you seen from your perspective? Because your perspective is different than ours.
Well, it is going to be special. I mean, I've been to these outdoor drafts, and Dallas wasn't an outdoors, indoors, but they had so much stuff surrounding AT&T Stadium down there that it was just a great atmosphere there. But I've been to them in, downtown, you know, Chicago and Grant Park, and in Philadelphia on the Rocky Steps, and I've seen just the buzz and just the electricity in the city for those drafts, and then the draft night itself is just off the charts. But none of those places are like Nashville. I mean, Nashville's unique in that there's such a there's an area where there's just so much to do, where you, if you can just get there, you can walk everywhere. And it's going to blow up next week. I mean, I'm glad that it's next week. You know, the draft is next week and not this week, because last night I was thinking as I was out down close to downtown around, you know, 8, 9 o'clock, and it was just a monsoon. Thinking, man, I'm lucky it's not the draft. It's the first night of the draft is not going on now, and then today is kind of a dreary day in Nashville. So you hope it's not like this next week. But I look at the long range forecast and it looks pretty good. It looks like the temperatures are going to be good. And if it is, I mean, it's going to be off the charts, because there's going to be people from all over the country here, from all over the world. I know people that send me messages in my mailbag and on social media that are coming in from overseas. And so it's going to be great. And when the draft ends, you know, some of these places, you know, especially in Dallas, when the draft is over that night, you know, everybody packs up and goes home. The thing about Nashville, when the draft ends, you're still going to have all these honky-tonk, and you're still going to have so much going on in the cities. I mean, so the party's going to go on all night, and it's going to be fun. I'll be in the middle of it on Thursday night for the first round. I'll be hunkered down in St. Thomas Sports Park, I guess, on Friday and Saturday. But it's going to be a lot of fun for people from Nashville and for people from all over the place.
Jim White is with us, TitansOnline.com. And, Jim, there was a story that hit earlier today. I don't know if it's been verified or if we know much of the details, but apparently the Raiders with John Gruden and Mike Mayock dismissed the scouting staff. So I'm just curious, you've talked a lot to the staff for the Titans. I know you've got an article on right now talking about sort of the preparations for this. The good thing for Titans fans does appear that there seems to be very good chemistry between John Robinson and Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, John Robinson was very involved in Mike Vrabel being hired. And obviously, Amy Adams Strunk felt like a change needed to be made. But, you know, John had some familiarity with Mike Vrabel. I think those guys have a similar mindset. They're both, you know, hardcore football guys, and they're not going to agree on everything. Mike Vrabel said himself, I mean, if you agree on everything, you just need one guy. But they have differences of opinion on some things. I think they have a healthy relationship where they're able to work through it. I mean, the GM and the scouts, I mean, those guys, I've got an office upstairs that's just down from the war room, and those guys have been working nonstop here over the last several months getting ready for this. I know the coaching staff is very involved in this. I mean, the assistant coaches are going to private workouts, and they're going to pro days, and there's a scout's opinion on thing, and there's a coach's opinion on thing, and some of those things, what they look for in players are different, but you kind of work through that to kind of figure out the guys that you want and that are good fits for your team. And I do feel like they're on the same page, and it's a healthy relationship, and I think now the key is just put yourself in a position where you're ready to go in the draft and hope things kind of fall your way. And I'm as curious as anybody to see how this is going to play out, because what happened in free agency kind of set the team up, at least early, to kind of go where the best player available, you know, can be had, and not necessarily picking for position. And when you do that, then I think you got a, you know, you got a real good chance to get a good player.
You just hit on an interesting dynamic, and you've been watching it for a long time. You go back to when Floyd Reese and Jeff Fisher were in those rooms, and they're taking the information from the scouts. But the scouts who are charged with watching the talent coming out, they're watching the entire college football season. They're watching over the long haul, and then, of course, supplementing it with what happens after the regular season. Whereas the coaching staff, you know, they're coaching the team. That they're not watching the college talent until after the season's over, but they will hone in on a couple of guys that they like, I'm sure. So is the system between the coaches, the scouts, and the GM much different than it was back in those days with Floyd and Jeff, or do you see some similarities?
Well, I think the coaches are a lot more involved now than they used to be. I mean, I can't ever remember. And I think this has started to change maybe over the years. But, you know, I think certainly since John Robinson's been in charge, I mean, I think there's been an emphasis on having the scouts get out and do more and do reports and go to these pro days and get to know players. I mean, the scouts are all over the country, as you mentioned, Willie. I mean, starting, you know, when the one draft ends, you know, they're turning their attention toward the next year's class, you know, draft class. And it's an exhausting effort, but they want the coaching staff's opinion on these guys as well. And it's not just Mike Vrabel. I mean, it's all the position coaches. You know, those guys have been busy and on the road themselves. And then they talk through some of these things and they spend time with them and they get a good idea of the personality and the guys that they'll be working with on a day-to-day basis in these classrooms and on the practice field. And that's important because, you know, if you don't get a coaching staff's opinion on this, you know, they're the guys going to be working with them closely once they're in the building. And if they have see some red flags or see some things that they feel like need to be talked about, they bring that into the conversation. And I think that has helped the team identify, you know, the best players that fit the team.
Your article talks about how they're maybe now looking for difference makers. I think we would all agree that they've done a very good job in the last year or two of finding good, solid role players. Their depth, I think, has been better than it has been in past years. But they're now looking for those top guys. You think that's a little different than before? Are they now better, I guess, feeling better about the roster as a whole and now just looking for finishing touches?
Yeah, I think so. I think the roster's solid, and I think, you know, it's not a situation where, you know, in past drafts where you're looking for three or four starters out of that draft class immediately. I mean, I think the way free agency's played out, I think the way this roster's been built, I mean, I think most positions are pretty solid. This team needs help at edge rusher. You know, that Harold Landry is going to be a good player. Cameron Wake obviously could come in and make a difference, and they like Kamilah Correa, and I think Sharif Finch is a promising guy. But, you know, and this is just me. You know, you ask John Robinson what the needs are, he's not going to tell you. He just says they're looking to get better at every position. But personally, I look at him, I think this team needs edge rushers. I think this team needs a big, nasty defensive lineman that's going to, you know, help Jarrell Casey on the D-line. This team needs help in the interior offensive line. And Roger Saifel was assigned to play one guard spot, and there's some good players that compete for the other spot. But I think you've still got to continue to pound that group. I think more playmakers on offense. I mean, I think receiver. I don't think you'll have too many young receivers because we've seen how long it takes maybe some guys to develop. But I think it needs more dynamic players at receiver, and it's not going to completely shock me if a tight end's out of this class. I mean, Delaney, I'm not going to question him or doubt him a minute. I think he's going to come in and pick up where he left off, but, you know, he's heading into his 14th year. He's 35 years old. He can't play forever. You saw what the Patriots did many years ago when they picked two tight ends in the same draft class, and they were great doing that for a while. I mean, I think it would be great if you could have another tight end and be a big difference maker too. So some needs need to be addressed. And if you can get dynamic players, game changers, game wreckers, whatever you'll call them, I think that's a big, big plus.
Tuesday night we sat in Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas, and watched Mike Minor pitch a complete game shutout against the Angels. 103 pitches. How about that?
That's pretty nice. I know earlier this week you had a showdown between Walker Buehler going up against Sonny Gray, which was a pretty good Vanderbilt matchup head-to-head at Dodger Stadium. I was glad to see Sonny Gray take the L in that one. But it was, you know, these Vandy pitchers are doing pretty well.
And what did Walker Buehler have, 8-9 strikeouts in that win?
He had a good day.
He was really good.
Yep, went 6. And so he's doing well. It's funny, though, that, you know, I root for the Vandy guys, obviously, but when they're playing the Dodgers, that goes out the window.
Not surprised by that answer. Jim, always appreciate the visit. Soak it all in. It's going to be a lot of fun next week, and we can't wait for it. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, you guys have a good weekend, good Easter weekend. Thank you.
All right, you do the same. That is Jim Wyatt. TitansOnline.com is where you can find his work. Back with more of Darren and Donick next.
So let's just concentrate on one game in your schedule, Tennessee. Everybody in Ohio this morning grabbed a little pocket schedule like Joy talked about yesterday. W on Tennessee. Okay, W. Okay, Rams, Seattle, New England, W on Tennessee. Well, let's just examine Tennessee. They finished with a better record than you did last year. Unlike the Browns, who beat one playoff team, 1-5 against playoff teams, only win against Baltimore Joe Flacco, who was later benched. Oh, Tennessee throttled Dallas, humiliated New England, clobbered Philadelphia. Well, but we added a lot of new pieces. Oh, so did Tennessee. Adam Humphries was the most expensive slot receiver. Cameron Wake's old, but he'll be a pass rusher. And they upgraded their offensive line, taking a Ram who is now a Tennessee Titan. And oh, by the way, they do not have a rookie coach. They have maybe the smartest and most successful of Bills coordinators, Mike Vrabel, the former player. My sources tell me Mike Vrabel, of all the New England Belichick guys, of all of them, Vrabel's going to work. Now, he was never a top assistant for Belichick. He was a player for him. But my guys in the NFL, my scouts, my guys say Tennessee's well coached. They were a Blaine Gabbert start from making the playoffs last year. And they have a history of going into places and stunning people. They're a very physical football team. Cleveland, you're not in a position to just discard teams as W's.
Willie Donick's mentor, Colin Cowherd. He loves Colin, so he wanted to play that clip. Your favorite sports talk show host. Hashtag sarcasm. Hashtag tongue-in-cheek. Hashtag fill in the blank. I did say this, though, and I brought it up with Jim Wine. I brought it up with Tim Asbeck yesterday. I'm telling you, by the way, the line is 4.5. We haven't even had the draft.
Why is there a line?
Well, because they'll take your money anytime.
Come on.
You can bet on anything, anytime. The line is the Browns by 4.5. And I'm serious, by the way. I think I'm going to – that's early on. That's the beginning of the season?
It's the opening day?
I think I'm going to road trip up. I think that'd be a good road trip. So I think I'm gonna take the fam up there. Go check out that game. But the Browns are going to be the most – heavily bet team because everybody's in this fever pitch, and I get it. They are the sexy pick, and I think their lines are going to be inflated early on until people go, oh, it is the Browns that we're talking about. They'll have to prove that they're for real. But I think they'll be over bet, and I think early on it's a little crazy to think with all those moving parts that they've got that there's going to be magic right away. Even if the magic happens, it's going to take time. You're not just going to come out in week one and look like a machine for a franchise, for a team that's never done it before, ever. When's the last time we said the Browns and machine in the same sentence?
Well, I think a lot is to be determined. That's why I put no stock in what Colin Cowherd says with most things anyway, but especially on April, whatever we are, for a game that's going to be played in September. I guess everybody gets excited when the schedule comes out I just don't get into that. I got to see how the pieces start fitting together. Obviously, you have to draft players. There's still another wave of pickups that you can make after the draft once you see what you get in the draft, and then what do you still need on your roster. So we're so far away from finding out. But, you know, I think the Browns are going to be really good. But I think that will be a really interesting spotlight game, only because there'll be so much attention being paid to the Browns, especially early in the season. But I think they are legitimately going to be good. But like we found out year after year, how you do in the first game doesn't always define your season one way or the other. A team could win 40-0 in that game, and it doesn't mean you've arrived. But that will be a fun one. I know some people that are definitely wanting to go up there and be a part of that game.
I think it'll be probably a lot of people in this area do a road trip up there.
Sure.
I could see a lot of Titans fans heading up there for that, because let's be honest, also, would you rather go to Cleveland in early September or November, December?
Oh, yeah, it'll be great.
Especially December.
Great time to go watch a game.
Yeah, the weather won't be an issue at all. It'll be great and manageable. In fact, it'll still be hot then. So I anticipate a lot. We haven't really talked a ton about the schedule. I didn't think the league did them any favors. I think it's once again in April, looking at it, it looks like a really difficult schedule unless the wheels fall off on teams like the Chiefs and the Saints. I mean, isn't it fair to think in April those teams are going to be really good this year?
I've been burned so many times on trying to make an assessment of the schedule in April. There's such a randomness. Everything changes. I saw a stat, I think, based on last year's winning percentage, the Titans have a top 10 tough schedule. But that doesn't mean anything, really, because things tend to change so drastically from year to year that you just don't know. It also changed from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. One theory I have is if you're going to have a road-heavy schedule, I'd rather have it at the beginning of the year when the weather, especially if you're not going to super hot places, you're playing a night game in Jacksonville, which shouldn't be a heat problem. You're playing the Falcons indoors. Mm-hmm. You're playing the Browns. That's the best time to go to Cleveland in terms of just getting a fair shake with the weather. Denver in October.
Be fine.
Denver's always tough to go to, but I'd rather do that early. My team is fresher. My team is, teams tend to be healthier at the beginning of the season. I'd rather take the home games on the back side where they have a stretch of 6 out of 9 before they end the season with a tough game, you know, in Houston.
Well, to your point, weather should not be an issue unless it's rain. Weather should not be an issue whatsoever for the Titans in their 2019 schedule, their road schedule, right?
Because not for road games.
December, yeah. They're in Indy. Okay, well, that doesn't matter. Oakland, they'll be playing in Oakland in December. And Houston. Indy, Oakland, Houston. That's their December road schedule. They have one road game in November. Carolina, the very beginning of November. Charlotte, November 3rd. That won't be an issue. We just talked about it. Cleveland at the beginning of September. Jacksonville, Atlanta, indoors. Denver, mid-October. Won't be an issue. Yeah, you got the thin air, but it won't be snowing in mid-October in Denver. Shouldn't even be that cold yet. So they should have no issues with their – it's not like they don't have a Green Bay or New York late December game or the Browns game in late December. They should not have any issues with weather whatsoever on the road.
Now, the other perspective that I think of is if you are the ticket sellers for the Titans, does it worry you that you have a lot of games bunched on the backside of the schedule? Would you rather have some home games early where you know the weather's going to be better? We know that's been a struggle, right, to fill the seats. It's going to continue to be a lingering issue. And so 4 games in 5 weeks, if I got this right, October 20th, 27th, November 10th, and then I guess a bye week, and then November 24th. So it's a lot of home games in a relatively short period of time. Then you come back with 2 in December, where the weather can be an issue there. I just wonder how they feel about the draw in terms of trying to maximize maximize the seats. And again, we can always fall back. Well, if they win, well, I get that. Everybody gets that. But they've had trouble filling the seats. Do they have a different approach this year? Do they like the schedule? What about the other team's fans? That's another cross-section of fans that have been part of the formula here. I'm curious how the wheels turn in their minds now that it's out and they're looking at it in front of them. What's their strategy to fill the seats for a team that's had a winning record 3 years in a row now?
Yep. We will come back a little bit more in depth on what Bryce Drew said to Pete Thamel. We'll talk about that on the other side of Darren and Donick, Nashville's best sports talk. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Very limited Predators tickets available. Yes, you can still get tickets available. Game 5, Saturday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena. Go to NashvillePredators.com for your chance to get in the house on Saturday. If you're going to do it now because those tickets are going to go away. Also, the Stanley Cup was in studio with us in the first hour. Dierks Bentley's Whiskey Row is where it'll be tonight on Broadway from 5:30 until 7:30 p.m. So you've got a two-hour window. If you're going to be downtown, go to Dierks Bentley's Whiskey Row and get a photo op with Lord Stanley Cup. That's tonight. Not sure if it's going to be in the house. Well, I'm sure it'll be in the house somewhere. It'll be we didn't know the schedule. We don't know the schedule for tomorrow, but I'm sure if you're going to the game, there'll probably be an opportunity as well. But tonight, get down there to Whiskey Row for your chance. Also, tomorrow, coverage beginning at 9 in the morning. Chase McAbabe Show from 9 until 11. Then Preds Extra, Ryan Porth and company, from 11 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. I will take over from there, pregame at 1, puck drop at 2, Pete Weber, Hal Gill on the call, everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You wanted to bring up Pete Thamel from Yahoo Sports and his conversation with former Vanderbilt head coach Bryce Drew.
Well, it's a very in-depth interview on Yahoo.com with Bryce Drew just doing a long sit-down about anything and everything, where he's going now, you know, the circumstances that led to the 0-19 and the firing. And then I think that's what people will probably find the most interesting, his perspective of what happened. And they did give Malcolm Turner a chance to talk. He declined to be a part of the story.
Malcolm Turner?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said in here, I haven't had a chance to read this. It's a lengthy article. Did you say that it was addressed that Bryce Drew talked about their meetings or lack of in there? Because remember, there was a report out there that we had heard that there wasn't even a meeting. I put it out there that I had been told there wasn't even a meeting. That kind of stuff was floating around and circulating, that they didn't even really have kind of a sit down. Let's just talk about the program. Let's talk about what you're doing. That the real sit-down was, hey, we're going to let you go. But you're saying in this article that was addressed?
Yes, with a lot of detail. This is Bryce Drew's perspective. And again, they gave Malcolm Turner a chance to comment or not comment. Drew said Turner attended one practice. They had no sit-down conversations prior to the dismissal and only interacted a handful of times. When Drew went to Turner's office as summoned on the day of his dismissal, he brought with him an 18-page plan of how to fix the program. It offered collaborative ideas, detailed areas for improvement, specific solutions. Drew never got a chance to hand him the document. That was going to be the first time we were going to have that conversation. Unfortunately, I never got to have the conversation. We never had a conversation about basketball. We never had a chance to sit down and talk. So it sounds like there were interactions, and he came to one practice, but never any real, hey, what's going on here? So, interesting perspective. And, of course, this is definitely, you know, heavily pushing the perspective of Bryce Drew, which is he's certainly entitled to it, and he has some other people saying, you know, take a look at what's happening here and here, and here's Bryce Drew. It definitely raised eyebrows with 6 years You know, 3 years left on a contract on a 6-year deal, and he's gone 3 years into it. But, you know, I think the reaction of Bryce Drew being fired was not met with outrage to the Vanderbilt fans, right? There's only so much you can defend when the program goes 0-19. And as I kept saying, it was the way that they were losing. You know, again, he's got a guy, let's see who the person is quoted. He's got Rick Barnes saying his guys never, ever stopped competing. Well, and Tom Crean also makes a comment. I think people who watch them every night, it's one thing to say if you're the Tennessee coach and you played them twice and the first time they took you to overtime, it's easy to say that, right? Even the game in Knoxville was competitive. But on so many nights, they were not competitive, right?
No. The Kentucky game at home, the two that really, really stood out to me were the Kentucky and Arkansas games at Memorial Gym, where they were just over at tip. I mean, honestly, it was never a game. I guess I shouldn't say never in the Arkansas game. The second half, they just got humiliated in the second half. Looked like a team that was so done with their season. I think I told you I didn't get a chance to read the entire article, but I started reading it. And what jumps up, just the small sample that I had, Willie, the part that still jumps out to me is what we've talked about a lot. And look, it's not about sitting here and piling on Bryce Drew. Bryce Drew is gone. We liked Bryce Drew. We appreciated our conversations with him. But, you know, this is also a business, and it's about results. And the results just were not there. It just wasn't good enough. I mean, you can't win 21 games in 2 years and expect to last in the SEC. The thing that goes back to is it's once again chronicling the 4-0 start in Kent State and all this hype about this recruiting class and how once Garland went down, it's almost like the team showed, once again, Bryce Drew still acting like that. It's almost like, it's when I knew the season.
Right.
It was over. Oh, we're not going to be able to recover from this. And his team played like that. His team played like the minute that happened, season over. That was one game. That was the fifth game of the season.
Well, I would cut it a little thinner, though, and I thought for a few weeks they did manage pretty well. They won some non-conference games. Their most notable win was against Arizona State. That was without Darius Garland. And then it started snowballing at the beginning of the conference season for sure. But I don't want to go back through the whole season, right? What's done is done.
No, I'm just simply saying that jumped out at me again. Like, he's still talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Months later, like, was the turning point. Once Garland went down, we didn't know what to do. It's like, yeah, I know. That's the problem. That's why you're having this conversation with Pete Thamel, because you didn't adjust at all. It just collapsed shortly after that. And you can't do that as a coach. If you are that dependent on one guy, then you're not cut out for this. Like,
right.
You cannot be that dependent on one player.
But I think a lot of coaches will read this article and say, wow, that was a quick hook. I think the coaching fraternity, because they put themselves in his shoes.
But
and
coaches
saying,
are going to naturally do that. I don't
no
look
question.
Into that. Coaches
no question.
Defend coaches.
Right. And he did have a very special player go down. That's, you know, from afar, I think most coaches would say, man, that was harsh to not give him another year when he had 3 years left on his deal. But now let's fast forward to today, because Malcolm Turner has definitely got his guy in Jerry Stackhouse. They're getting out there. They're trying to get – I see a lot of social media things that they're doing. I saw Jerry Stackhouse go over and interact with some of the fraternities, you know, shoot around on hoops and everything. This is great. And you heard Jim Wyatt say, you know, he likes Jerry Stackhouse. I think we all like Jerry Stackhouse. My questions are the same, though, as they were. They have gone to a totally new model on how you build a program with a guy that has not ever coached in college. His staff, he just hired a guy today who was on the staff with him with the Memphis Grizzlies. All right, there's another guy with virtually no college basketball background. He hired the woman. This is the girl
he
was talking about. What was the show, The Billions? Mm-hmm. Right, I'm presuming that's her. The woman, and that's really cool. He also hired a guy from
Wendy from Billions.
Yeah, that's the reference he was making.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pull up her name here. She actually does have a name. And that's a cool story. Her name is...
Nikki Gross.
Nikki Gross, yes. Yeah. Previously the only female assistant in the NBA G League. So again, working from his comfort zone. He also hired David Grace, a veteran assistant in the Pac-12, a longtime assistant at UCLA. He recruited people like Lonzo Ball, and he had some really good recruiting. I think he's an ace recruiter. Okay. But where is your bedrock person who has run a college basketball program? David Grace doesn't look to me like an X and O guy. He looks like a recruiting guy, and he's a big man coach. That's the other way that he's also a retired Air Force guy, right? He's also tied into the AAU. To me, yes, he's going to develop big man, and he's going to get you players. But what about the administrative side of the program? What about your system that you're going to run? I still have some big, big questions. Nobody that he's brought in has any experience at a place like Vanderbilt, right? If you told me he was building the program at, let's say, Memphis, or I don't know, pick some other schools, Texas Tech or
Houston,
St. John's or Houston, or I get it, but none of those people on the staff are familiar with the Vanderbilt model. So we're talking about a brand new model. That could be great, but it's very scary for me that it's seen what has worked and what hasn't worked at Vanderbilt for a long time. It's outside the box, no question about it.
Well, it's scary because there's no proof that it will work. That there's no proof to this point. Now, Malcolm Turner,
I can't prove that it won't work.
And it may get the last laugh, and this may end up being fantastic, and we'll all be like, wow, didn't see this coming. And that's great. That's what we want to see happen. But there's just – the point is there's no proof to show us that this is going to indeed work out. If we have this conversation 4 years from now, we need to see where we look back and go, wow. But, you know, that'll be the new example, right? When we have something like that. But yeah, but we thought that about Jerry Stackhouse, and look how that turned out, right? We hope that's the conversation.
It's a staff that screams, "We're gonna find a bunch of NBA players," and that would be great. But I just want to make sure that hey, this is Vanderbilt we're talking about here. You got to have that special blend of NBA talent and desire to graduate, etc. You know, you got to be a student. So. If he's got that balance, it could be really special. But this is really interesting to me. It's very, very different than anything that's been done before.
Back to wrap up Friday's edition of Darren and Donnick next. Want to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds and the Stars Game 5 tomorrow afternoon? Had a good conversation with Patrick Sharp from NBC Sports, former player with the Blackhawks and the Stars. He, of course, that game is going to be on NBC tomorrow on the national stage on television. Of course, on the radio side, everything right here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, Nashville. But you got a chance to win today. K-Bob's Grill and Ale, that's located at 1602 21st Avenue South. That's today from 2 until 6 o'clock. For more details, go to thegamenashville.com. So another chance for you to be in the building with us tomorrow. Before we get out of here, Marquise, do we have that? I'd like to preview tomorrow why you should be listening to pregame. We've got action starting with Chase's show starting at 9 o'clock in the morning all day on this station. But in pregame, Chase caught up with Craig Smith, and you're going to hear that full interview tomorrow in pregame. But here's a little snippet of things to come tomorrow in pregame.
It's huge. I think for our team, I think there's a lot of areas that haven't been good for a long time. So I think just let's just refresh, just step back, recalibrate. We got to come and just play a game tomorrow night. That's it. I'm not going to look at – we looked at enough X's and O's and video and all this, you know, all these certain situational schemes that we're kind of looking at. But it's just all about getting out there and letting her rip and play a game.
And that was Chase's question asking about what does this – remember,
the extra day.
We've been talking about this, that extra day, because normally these series, it's every other day. And now for the second time in this series, there's that extra day. And Chase asked him, what does that extra day do for you? And you heard Craig's answer.
I thought it was an interesting answer. I think basically he gave sort of the theory of you don't want to have paralysis by analysis. Get away from it. reset yourself? He used, what did he say? He used recalibrate. Is that what he said?
Yes.
I think that's a great way of looking at it.
I think, and he again, also said you could, X's and O's, and then he was going to say a word, then stop. Yeah. Maybe he was just going to say crap.
But you know what, though? You can feel the emotion and the desire that he has for this team to do well in his voice there. You could, as you heard him talk.
It's always been with Craig Smith.
Yeah.
I've tried explaining that to people for years. That this guy is a fierce competitor.
And there's honesty in there, right?
Yes, the other part I like about him.
He's
very
talking about some facets of the game. You know what he's talking about. The power play is what he's
of
talking
course.
About, right? And obviously the penalty kill struggled the other night, but by and large, it's been really good. But he tried to simplify it. He said, this is about just winning a game, right? I think he says, what I'm feeling in there is this is a veteran team. They've been through a lot. They know how to win. They know what they have to do. They're not going to learn anything in these couple practices. There's going to be some details. There's going to be some adjustments, and there should be. And obviously, the lines appear that they are going to be adjusted, right? Craig Smith is now on a line with Bonino and Watson, right? And they put Colton Sissons with Mikhail Granlund and Callie Yarncroke. Rocco Grimaldi did not practice today.
Boyle, maintenance day. Peter Laviolette did say it was
day.
A maintenance day.
So we'll have to see what happens tomorrow.
That is going to do it for our show today. And that's going to do it for our show this week. You have a fantastic weekend. We will have tons to discuss from Dallas on Monday. We'll be at American Airlines Center Monday morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.